This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can. Ugh.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Winston's collection there.
Osmond to star in American Pie, of course.
Bismarck.
No, was it? Bismarck was that?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy? I'm getting
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. It just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I didn't mean much to shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like big dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation. Let me know what
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast, and mothership here at Place to Be Nation. I am your co-host, Just Rosero, joined, as always, by my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you, sir?
Good evening, JR. How are you, sir? Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 389 of the mothership. How are you, sir?
I'm good. The holiday season is here, of course, as we've talked about multiple times.
Yes.
Christmas is quite close, so that's always exciting as well. We're nearing the end of the year festivities. Always a good time to be alive. So lots going on in the sports world. Lots going on in the wrestling world.
We haven't talked
world.
Since we hung out in Beantown.
Yes, yes. A great time as always.
Yep.
Always fun seeing the crew. So no.
Yes.
No complaints there. Things went smoothly as always. So we'll be talking more about that, I'm sure, in the future, and more about the direction of WWE. Main Event will be back from its hiatus soon in a couple weeks. So we'll be covering it there. Of course, Kevin Kelly had another great episode last week. New Dangerous Alliance coming. So lots of good stuff, as always. But tonight we're back inside the Vintage Vault.
We are. We are in the big steel box. And we had a good run going. We had...
Hey, what is going on?
Sutton asked me today what kind of nachos he likes. I said, I don't know. He makes a mess, but that's okay. It's his box.
We are on a good run. And it's you know, big shoes for the show to step into because, you know, even its predecessor on the Blue Brand, Judgment Day, was a pretty fun show. Better than many may have remembered, especially the main event is great.
Yes.
And then One Night Stand, awesome. Vengeance, very, very good. Yep. And so... WWE's kind of on a hot streak here. I mean, Backlash was serviceable, but since Mania, we're in a, you know, even all year, like, No Way Out and Backlash were maybe the shakiest, but the Rumble was really good. You know, New Year's Revolution, fine. So we haven't really had, like, a stinker yet this year. We'll see if they keep things going. And I've been, through the first half of 05, I've been impressed because I always pictured it in my mind, because I haven't seen these that many times, as had kind of mirroring 04. Like, 04 and 05 always seem kind of dank to me, but 05 has been a little bit more impressive to date.
Yeah, I mean, the rosters seem a little bit more in line than they were. I mean, we talked a lot when we were doing 2004 that the rosters just seemed so herky jerky and misbalanced, and you know, main events were a little, you know, stark on SmackDown and overloaded on Raw,
and lots of green.
Yes.
Rookies showing up and getting matches out of nowhere and not getting over.
Yeah, exactly. In 2005, I feel like, particularly after Mania, I think they drew the line in the sand, no pun intended, that here are the guys on each show, and this is what we're going to do. And then they kind of shook it up with the draft, with the lottery. We talked about the Raw picks. Tonight we'll mention the SmackDown side of the picks, mm-hmm. but might as well say the show. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you a pay-per-view invented by your boy, man with the polka dots, baby, yeah.
Yes, sir.
The Great American Bash 2005. I always like the Bash pay-per-views because I love all the, you know, the Americana, the red, white, and blue. I love all the graphics. It's always a fun show to look at. The graphics are always nice, always bright. I love the big American flags that always hang on the stage. It's a very cool pay-per-view in that aspect. I always like the aesthetics.
Sadly, the 2004 installments did not really carry the reputation.
No, the show itself was utter, yes. was crap. But we'll see what happens on this show because, as mentioned, this show affected just as much by the draft as the next Raw only pay-per-view. Vengeance was a little different because we were still kind of in that, you know, middle phase where the draft wasn't totally finished yet. We'll get more into that when we get to Unforgiven about the next Raw only pay-per-view when Raw has its set roster. Vengeance, we can't really say that because they were kind of in between. We still had a wealth of guys that are no longer on Raw right now. So, all right, July 24th, 2005, live from the HSBC Arena in Buffalo, New York. And with this show, JR, New York, with its 18th pay-per-view at this point, has gone ahead of California by one for the title of WWE's number one pay-per-view state. It is New York 18, California 17.
Always that East Coast, West Coast feud.
That's right. That's right. Bad Boy and, Bad Boy and
Death Row.
Death Row. Thank you. Last time we were in Buffalo on pay-per-view, JR.
It been a while. Was, I want to say, Fully Loaded 99.
You are correct, sir. So we have not been here in exact. We've not been here for pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say that again. We've not been here pay-per-view wise
mm-hmm.
in exactly 6 years. Long time. Long time. Buffalo always a good crowd. The crowd on this show is 8,000, which is kind of small.
We've seen lately what the Buffalo crowds are like. You know, banging in the parking lots.
Yeah, exactly. What is that? Huh?
Stands, all kinds of stuff.
Hey, honey,
wait
for the grill to heat up. Let me throw it in you for a few minutes.
Right. I mean, no wonder why they're always excited for these shows. Honey, here comes Muhammad Hassan. Let's do it.
No. Oh my God. Anyway,
it's my kind of town.
Yeah, your attendance 8,000, which is very small. Obviously, the place seats probably about 19,000 because the Sabres play there, so a lot of seats cut off. Your buy rate not great, 0.58. Oof, not a good buy rate. And your announcers, the voice of the Blue Brand at ringside, Michael Cole and Taz. JR, give us a Le Sauton report.
Le Sauton, indeed. Here are the SmackDown draft picks that happened. Like you said, we mentioned the Raw ones back at Vengeance. Chris Benoit, Randy Orton, Muhammad Hassan and Daivari, Christian and Batista. So pretty loaded group heading over to SmackDown.
Yeah, yes.
The story is always that SmackDown gets screwed in the drafts. But, I mean, they did okay this time around. They mm-hmm. got some really solid upper mid-carders up, you know, and main eventers. So.
Well, yeah. And who did they really lose? They lost Cena, but, mm-hmm. I mean, that cancels out with Batista. They lost Kurt, but Kurt had pretty much pretty much exhausted the whole roster in terms of feuds. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he needed a change of scenery. Well, pretty much it in that aspect in terms of big names moving from SmackDown to Raw. So they didn't lose much in that aspect, and I think they got a lot. They got a lot in return. So now, would you say now that we officially announced the lottery, who did come off? Better when it ended. Who did you think came out better?
Which brand?
Yeah, right as the draft ended. Not in retrospect, but at that moment, who do you think? Who were you more excited about?
I think it depended on if you were higher on Batista or Cena. I mean, that's what sells it, right? If you were a Cena guy, you thought Raw got a steal, and if you were a Batista guy, you would think SmackDown. Okay, this is where I'm going to be watching because I think Batista is better than Cena. So. You know, Orton's a weird pick here because he was still hurt. Like, he hadn't returned to TV yet, so that's a, kind of a future pick that he was out there, kind of a reminder that he existed. So, but Christian was red hot. Benoit, I think it was a good move for him to get, you know, he ran his course on Raw. He did all he could with Triple H and Shawn Michaels and those guys. So I think it was good for him to get over to SmackDown and maybe reestablish himself and fill the void that Angle had left as that upper mid-card workhorse. So we'll see how that plays out. There was also that trade we talked about back at Vengeance as well. So William Regal, yep. Candice Michelle, Sylvain Grenier, Steven Richards, Simon Dean all moved over to SmackDown. And, of course, Simon Dean and Steve Richards moved over for a specific reason we'll talk about later that played off One Night Stand. Do you remember the song on this evening?
Believe it or not, I do. It was Pay the Price by that hot Grammy-winning legendary band, Eric and the Hostiles.
Yes. Did they talk about it a lot, or did you just happen to notice it?
I just noticed it today.
I just watched it like the other day.
I watched it today, and I just remember it popping up, and I'm like, let me make sure I remember this. Pay the Price, Eric and the... I just remembered Hostiles. I knew Eric and the something, and then the
Hostiles. Get it right, or Pay the Price.
Stupid. And the sponsor really didn't count. Sponsor was WWE.com, which means there was no sponsor.
I had nothing. Joey Styles and WWE.com. Exactly. All right, championship roll call. Batista is your SmackDown heavyweight champion. Orlando Jordan still your United States champion. Eminem still your tag team champions. And Paul London still your cruiserweight champion. We had two passing away, two stars pass or legends passing away here. I guess you could maybe one is a legend, I guess. But I'll tell you the first one. You can guess the second one. July 16th, former superstar Miguel Perez Sr. suffered a heart attack at the age of 68. And on 7/21,
I remember this one very well.
Who was it?
Well, we hear him every if our editors play the right break, we hear him on every single podcast on the PWO PTBN network. No, it's not him. Somebody else. Promotional consideration paid for by the following. The That's great right. Lord Alfred
You're
Hayes.
You're on point tonight. You have a very, very good memory of July of 05, I guess.
I do. Yes, Lord Alfred Hayes passed away. Yes. Very sad. Mm-hmm. I think the WWE Hall of Fame building, if there ever is one, should have his brown tuxedo should be in there. You know, we're coming up, JR, on our network adventure. We're coming up on the run of like 40 straight TNTs. So you better get used to that brown tuxedo. Be very, very cozy. But very sad. Lord Alfred, of course, kind of a standard of the early, early era of the Federation years, 84 through, I mean, he was around in 93, but I mean, that by then he wasn't on much. I think the product had gotten kind of, you know, kind of passed him by a little bit, but I remember him mostly, you know, 85 through like 90 into 91. That's kind of what I remember from Lord Alfred. But
well, the worst part is, too, they messed up his obituary.
They did?
Devoted sister, beloved cunt.
I think that's what Paul Orndorff called him once in an episode of TNT.
All right, anyway. So, yes, Lord Alfred, old very sad. And 76. And if you remember the stories that's out there, it was in Titan Sinking, and did JJ tell it on our show? Or someone talked about it, how he had been offered, you know, they started cutting the salary of guys like J.J. Dillon. He did talk about that when he was on with us.
Yep.
A lot of the office guys, they cut the salary, and they basically told Hayes, like, we're cutting your salary. And he was like, screw you, I'm going home. And he just left. So
yeah.
That was the end of his run in 95. And that happened to a lot of those old stalwarts at that time when they had to, you know, tighten the belt a little bit when the money was bad. So, and speaking of tightening the belt, there was a massive clearing out of stars between July 5th and 25th, and the 5th and 6th was like the big haul where just things went crazy. And again, we've told the story before when I came over to your desk like every 20 minutes and
three more
guys would be gone. It was like
That's
out
right.
of nowhere. And
That's
these
right.
are some pretty big names got dumped here. So
yeah.
on July 5th, Maven was cut. TV record of 55, 77, and 4. Mm-hmm. Spike Dudley dumped 85, 133, and 1. And of course, he had been around since before WrestleMania 17. Billy Kidman, who came in around the same time, 75, 74, and 3.
That was a tragedy. I was a little bummed at that.
Mark Jindrak, another WCW guy that came over at that time, 61, 33, and 2. Miss Jackie cut, 3, 9, and 2. So getting rid of all the tough enough failures. So she's gone. Maven's gone. Joy Giovanni released due to budget cuts. Big Show's girlfriend. I'm sure he's very upset. This is now on July 6th, starting with Jackie. The Big Shock, the Dudleys, dumped due to budget cuts. Bubba, 304, 171, and 14. Devon, 178, 165, and 11. And very surprising to me at the time. The writing was on the wall if you were like actually thinking about it, but the problem is you probably weren't at the time because you never thought they'd actually get rid of them. But, I mean, we've talked about what, since 03, how stale they are in many ways, and they got the little bump with the heel turn, and... But even One Night Stand almost felt like a like a real send off for them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely did. And they weren't on TV much, it didn't seem like, either, through most of 05.
They had taken time off.
Yeah, so they weren't on SmackDown. Right, were they still on SmackDown? Yeah, they were still on SmackDown. So you didn't see them much. And you're talking about a tag division that wasn't very deep.
Right.
And to not have them on really was telling, you know? Mm-hmm.
So they're gone, and they would obviously not return until 2015, so 10 years they'd be gone for. Matt Morgan, 8-9-1 released. Dawn Marie, another lady that's been around for a while, since 02, 4-14-3. Hiroko and Kenzo Suzuki both cut. Kenzo 11-22, Hiroko 0-2. Jim Cornette was released on July 8th after he had slapped Boris Alexiev, an OVW competitor. He was 1-2. But Cornette, of course, was smacked him after, I think, Boris was like laughing during a match or something, and Cornette went nuts and smacked him across the face. So they released him. So another, really long time. He had been around for 12 years. Like, Earl Hebner dumped 10 days later because he allegedly sold merchandise without authorization.
Tailgating.
He was 2-0.
He was tailgating. Jesus.
A day later, Dave was cut as well. So the Hebners are both gone. Ivory, 3 days later, she refused to renew her contract, they refused to renew her contract, 45, 64, and 6. Mm-hmm. And then Blue Meanie, his short-term deal expired. We'll talk about him in a few minutes. But
yeah.
So, a lot of, some long-term, really, the Hebners, Cornette, like, those are some big names that went in July, and Hebners did it to themselves, all three really did it to themselves, but, Cornette had really quite worn out as a welcome. Will talked about this on one of our recent Dangerous Lions shows, how he thinks, just how out of touch he got quickly, and his OVW booking was one of the reasons he did that. And, he had some stars come out of that time period, and we talked about them. They all, Cena, Batista, all these guys, he was around then, but he's gone now. So we'll talk about eventually, I think, who replaces him. But Cornette, never to return still as of this time, 2015.
Yep.
So,
And Dave and Earl, Dave's been here since... Jesus, 84?
Yeah, probably 84, 85.
And Earl came in 88, obviously, with the evil, plastic surgery switch.
Right. So. Memorable. They pretty much between the two of them, other than a show here or there, have done did the main events of almost every big pay-per-view match. So.
Yeah, Montreal, they were all over the place. Yeah.
Yep. So the Hebners are gone.
Did you notice, JR, that a lot of... Except for the couple of cruisers, a lot of the guys that got cut were muscle dudes.
Mm.
Morgan, Jindrak. Did they think? We've been pseudo joking, but really serious that 2005 was a bad year for pharmaceuticals.
No, I don't think that played a role. I think they just. Morgan had they gave a shot. I don't know if they ever gave him a real shot, but and Jindrak had had his chances. He had been around for a while. The Team Angle thing. You're right, and the Team Angle thing that kind of died off. I think the bigger. Stretch is that they're cleaning out a lot of the old, vestiges from like the end of the Attitude Era / WCW death time. So if you look at the names, Spike, Kidman, Jindrak, the Dudleys, like, a handful of these guys came in right around that time. And Dudleys, were a little bit before then. But if you start to look at the roster, besides like the high level guys and a couple, veterans like Holly and a couple other guys, they really started to clean house on the Attitude Era guys themselves.
Right. Weird. But let's be honest. There was barely any room for any of these guys. Raw was pretty much, jacked top to bottom. SmackDown was pretty jacked top to bottom. There was just no room for these guys anymore. They were starting. This was the time now, 05, and we'll see a lot more of it in 06 where tag teams start to get elevated. You already talk about it with Eminem. So a couple other teams come up through 05 into 06 mm-hmm. on SmackDown. So there's no room for guys like the Dudleys anymore. And that's fine. It's time for them to move on. And they'd be better suited. They eventually would go to TNA. Because at the time, TNA kind of needed some more names. I don't know what Dixie paid them when they first got there. But, they just need some guys just need a change of scenery, Some of these other cruisers and smaller guys, cruiserweight division would last for a while, but it's weird. And you'll mention the dark matches in a minute. The cruiserweight title doesn't even show up here. So it tells you how much they think of that. But, it needed to be done. It needed to be done. And we'll see. as we get through the end of 05 and into 06 that OVW kind of has a little a metamorphosis itself. Somebody else, as you mentioned, takes over OVW, and then a major indie guy comes in towards the end of 05 in OVW, and we'll talk about him in 06. So
tonight, because I'm bizarre.
No, not him.
Okay.
You wish he was running OVW.
So TV by the numbers, SmackDown 310 episodes, Velocity 161, Impact 57. Mm-hmm. 719, there's supposed to be a Velocity match with M&M taking on Balls Mahoney and Axel Rotten, but the Maryland State Athletic Commission refused to let Axel Rotten compete. So,
what a fucking shock.
Grossly out of shape, I don't know. 717, TNA had No Surrender. Main event was Raven defending his NWA championship over Abyss in a dog collar match. Rhino made his debut after being released earlier in the year.
Wow, a main event that didn't have Jeff Jarrett in it.
I know, right? Shocking. Jesus.
But 05 was a good year for we've talked about it. We talked about our main event a few times too. 05 was actually not a bad year for TNA. Top to bottom, they had some. The roster actually wasn't too bad for them. I mean, WWE's was still better, but I don't think at least for the next couple of years TNA would get too much better than they'd get in these 2 years. A pretty decent roster of X Division guys and a couple decent main eventers. So. Anyway, that
quick
was
Ring of Honor note. CM Punk had signed his WWE contract officially. he signed it on top of the ROH Championship belt on July 8th, kicked off
right.
the Summer of Punk. So.
Summer of Punk, yep. And you and I would, was it that month or was it next? Was it in August? I'm trying to remember when we went.
Because Hardy was still out there.
That's right, yes. You and I went to a, I'm trying to remember the date, July, let's see if this was the 24th. Might have been the night before, might have been the day before here.
Think so.
July 23rd, maybe? Or the week after the 30th. It was either the 23rd, the 30th, or the first Saturday in August. We went to a – I'll have to look it up on ROH Wrestling because I know it's on a DVD. We went to a show in Woodbridge, which is about a half hour from
– Woodbridge?
It was Woodbridge, yeah. About a half hour from where I live right now. It was in this – oh, my – I remember it was fucking like 150 degrees. It was like no – it was, and it was the one time I saw the awesome WWE Legends figure of Eddie – when he had the awesome white tights with the red, like lightning stripes that he had in WCW. I used to love that figure, and I didn't have the money. But we saw Punk that night. He defended the
July
TV.
16th.
16th. So it was the – oh, okay. So it was the week before this. Okay.
Yeah, it's Fate of an Angel, CM Punk versus James Gibson.
James Gibson, who, of course, as we all know, is Jamie Noble. We saw Matt Hardy against Christopher Daniels.
Yep.
Here's the was your boy there? I don't think your boy was there. Was he there that night? Was he in the embassy at that point? No, right?
No, here's the full card. It was Nigel McGuinness over Claudio Castagnoli, Austin Aries over El Generico. So it's funny seeing some of these guys.
I know, really. It's amazing when we saw this card. Freaking crazy.
We saw Sami Zayn, we saw Cesaro. Homicide defeated Azrael, Dixie, and Kevin Steen in a four-quarter. I have no memory of Kevin Steen.
I have zero memory of seeing Kevin Steen in that match. Oh, my God.
The Carnage crew, H.G. Loke and Tony DeVito, defeated the Embassy, Lacey's Angels, and the Ring Crew Express, Donna Marcos, in an ultimate endurance match. AJ Styles defeated Roddy Strong.
I remember.
Samoa Joe defeated Jimmy Rave for the Pure title.
Yep.
Matt Hardy over Christopher Daniels and Punk over Gibson. 27 minutes. 1,000 people in the house that night. So
yeah, hot as fuck. But oh my God. So we pretty much saw like three quarters of NXT that night.
Yeah, I know. Pretty crazy.
It's kind of nuts. All right. What do you have? The heat matches still, right? What do we got?
Yeah, heat match. I was just trying to look if John. I don't think John was in that match that night.
Was he in ROH in 05?
No, I think he was gone already.
He was gone by then, right? 04 is when he had the Pure title, right? Didn't he have the Pure title for a decent stretch?
Yeah.
I think it was 04 he had it. Yeah, he was in the Embassy. That's right.
Embassy
Prince Nana, who's still there, isn't he? Is Prince Nana still in Ring of Honor?
Yeah, he pops up every now and then.
That's funny.
Yes. So Great American Bash Heat, Paul London retained his Cruiserweight title of a Nunzio, like you mentioned earlier.
Yep.
And I think that's about it. We got some other stuff we can cover as we mosey on along. So, like we said, big shoes to fill. And I agree with you that the look of the ring and the arena was really cool.
Yes. Big American flags. I always love the colors and everything. So in that aspect, in terms of the aesthetics, I always love this pay-per-view. But just a question.
Love this pay-per-view.
But it's the meat and potatoes that matter. All right, let's dive in.
Yes. Meat and potatoes, indeed.
Meat and potatoes. Let's dive in. Our opener is our first title match of the evening, JR. The Blue Belts on the line, the WWE Tag Team titles.
I've been watching you from afar for as long as I can remember. You're all a real man can need and never ask for a better. This is love.
I haven't pulled the coach bag out in a while.
We thought I was gone forever.
Oh, man. I didn't think of that when I watched this match today either. It's like, oh, shit. Oh, when was the last time we played that? Oh, my God. Do we play it when they had that one match on Raw in 03? Do we play it like on a vault?
Maybe we
play
it on a vault for like just in memory. If not, it would have been late 98 would have been the last time.
Yeah, geez. Yeah, really. Holy shit.
Oh, actually, were they in the... No, I don't know if we played it at 15. They were in that Battle Royal.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We may have played it there.
We may have played it at 15, but I wonder if we played it at, I guess it would have been what? Either Judgment Day 03 or Bad Blood 03, just as like a tribute when Hawk died. Maybe. I don't know. So anyway, yeah, as you hear, we thought we were going to be songless tonight, but we were not. The Blue Belt's on the line. Eminem defends against this team.
Hi, Dan. Who is Reich?
With what?
His brother John Laurinaitis gaining power in the front office, and a Legion of Doom DVD on racks and stores. Animal was brought back for one last in-ring run. They thought they could use him for a quick nostalgia run, push the DVD, and help him get some younger stars over. Made his return on July 14th, saving Heidenreich from an attack at the hands of Eminem. Eminem then challenged the two to a match at the pay-per-view, and Animal and Heidenreich accepted and won a quick squash match the week next week to begin their run as a tag team. On 6/23, Mercury defeated Heidenreich thanks to some help from Nitro. And Animal's last match, 6 years, 7 months, and 21 days ago, him and Hawk lost to the Headbangers at Capital Carnage. So,
good.
There you go. So, when was that? Was that early 99, that show?
No. Capital Carnage. No, I think Capital Carnage was December 98.
Then he's wrong.
Let me see. Let me look it up. Capital Carnage.
Because I could have swore they were in that 15.
Capital Carnage was a professional. Was a professionally. Starting to sound
December
like 6,
98.
Yeah, December 6, 98. So.
Let me see if they were in the WrestleMania. Maybe they just talked on. I know they showed up on Raw in 99. They like had like an inset interview. I could have swore they were in that Battle Royal. Yeah, they were. Yep, they were in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 15. Sutton just got schmocked.
Ugh. Why don't you type that in your little,
well,
your little thread?
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. He said last pay-per-view match. That was technically Heat. I guess we can let it slide.
Does it say who the Battle Royal is? It doesn't say who all the Battle Royal. Does it say here who's in it?
The Battle Royal is Rock a Rock, Johnny Grunge, Viscera, Gilbert, Animal, 8-Ball, Skull, Hawk, Scott Taylor, Farouk, Tiger Ali Singh, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, Midian, Brian Christopher, Steve Blackman, Bradshaw, The Godfather, Draws, and then Test and D'Lo Brown.
Okay.
Who won the match. Anyway.
So there we go.
Eminem still the star feel. Melina's looking pretty good here. SmackDown roster still kind of thin. We got the Animal Nostalgia run. And he's looking a little portly, I thought.
He was a little paunchy.
Give Heidenreich something to do, though, because he's worked pretty hard. He's kind of been one of our sneaky favorites throughout 05.
Yes.
Yeah, that's worked hard in all his matches. A little clunky in the ring, but infectious with his attitude and a little bit of charisma, surprisingly enough. So it was good that they gave him something. And I think a face role kind of suits him better, where he doesn't have to dominate matches. He can fulfill that, you know, kind of bushwhacker-esque role in the lower part of the card, do the poetry with the kids and everything else. Mm-hmm. So the crowd is hot early. Big pop for Animal. He does a double suplex of both Eminem members. And the crowd chants LOD. Mercury clips Hawk's knee, Heidenreich's knee, to turn momentum with an assist from Molina. Eminem start to double team, but Heidenreich powers out a pin cover. His Animal gets a hot tag and cleans house, but Eminem grabs a close near fall after using the title belt. Heidenreich breaks up the snapshot on Animal, and the Animal hits a power slam on Mercury, and Heidenreich goes up to the top, and they hit the Doomsday Device for the huge win in a big-time upset. I was shocked at the time. I thought Eminem would have a long run. I thought this was nothing more than just kind of a gimmicky nostalgia thing to push the DVD, and I was shocked when they actually gave them the belts. I would not have picked that in a million years. You know, maybe these days it'd be a little more obvious, but at the time, the nostalgia stuff was still kind of fresh and new. I didn't think Animal was actually sticking around. I thought maybe it was a one-time thing. They'd kind of, you know, put over Hawk in the DVD, and then he'd be gone. But in retrospect, it was a cool moment. The crowd loved it. They went nuts.
Yeah,
and it made sense with all the Hawk talk as well. But, you know, Taz was talking about Hawk a lot in his legacy throughout the match. That should have been the giveaway, I guess. Fun match, too. I thought it was much better than it should have been. The crowd was into it. They kept a pretty good pace. I mean, Eminem's really good, and Molina was a good kind of heat target at ringside. So I thought we'd get off to a pretty good start here. I really enjoyed this. This kind of is a fun, you know, fun tag team opener.
Yeah, and I agree with you that I never thought in a million years they'd actually win the belts. I thought this was going to be, you know, a fun little match with some nostalgia moments. Maybe they'd hit a doomsday device.
Nostalgia.
But, you know, I thought maybe they'd hit a doomsday device, but I thought maybe, you know, there'd be some Melina chicanery or something.
Right. They'll either Ida Wright gets pinned, or maybe you get like a DQ or something where she comes
Melina
in and smacks Animal, or Animal uses her shoe, or, you know, something stupid.
Yeah.
Like that.
Or, you know, they would do like Melina Heidenreich, like they did for, you know, Phineas and Sonny kind of thing,
right,
where, you know, her feminine wiles kind of, you know. But to actually win the belts, I mean, no, absolutely not. If it was a team like La Rez or some kind of clunky hump team, then maybe. But Eminem was easily the best team on either show.
Yeah, they
right
seemed
now.
So primed for like a run. I mean, I just assumed they weren't going to drop the belts for a long time.
Yeah, I was pretty stunned. I agree with you. I was pretty stunned. Was I pumped? Oh, I was on cloud nine. Oh, that was awesome. You know, Animal looked like he was carrying Hawk's love child, that's all right. He was probably like, oh, I'll buy a few DVDs and I'll do some interviews. Hey, you want to wrestle?
Right.
What?
Oh, shit. Okay.
What?
Let me get these pants taken out a little bit. These tights.
These tights. So, I mean, and I'm kind of glad they didn't go full out.
What? He walked down Main Street to the tailor and he turns around and Scott's in the other window in his car looking out with the binoculars. Always kind of admiring Animal, even in his time off. Wondering where he got that bagel because he pulled up a little bit late, but he's watching him go into the seamstress, get his pants taken out a bit, measuring his waist.
Getting a bagel.
Scott getting all excited. Wondering where he's headed next. Maybe a movie. Get a drink. You never know. Day in the life of an animal.
I don't know. Animal looks more like an egg and cheese on a hard roll kind of guy. You mean like a bagel with lox or something?
Legs with multiple cheeses.
But yeah, I was stunned. I have no idea. Eminem was so hot at this point, and Melina was so hot, and
that's why he came
won.
Back for the match. Oh, Eminem. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, here we go. Eminem's all right. Nah, you know, come on. I mean, he was. I don't know how old he is now, but I mean, I'm sure he probably didn't realize. Oh shit, I actually have to wrestle. I'm also happy that they kind of kept Heidenreich in his tights and then put any. I know they kind of do it eventually.
Oh yeah, they go full bore later.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do it immediately.
Right,
because that would have been cheesy.
They pretty much do the draw thing. They've had such a hard on for that freaking thing for forever.
I know.
It's like, oh my god, we finally got someone that can do it. Put him in the tights.
You know,
it's like immediately, like he does exactly what Draws did. I think. So
yeah, we need another Hawk.
So Animal's only 55 now. He's born 1960. So. He would
so
have only
he was
been
45.
He was 45. That's not too bad. I mean, that's the main eventer now. That's nothing.
Yeah. No, not bad at all. He probably was like, you mean I got to go to the gym? Shit.
Man,
so you know,
he was only 30 when they made their WWF debut in 1990. So pretty young.
Oh yeah, they were young. I mean, when they debuted in Georgia, yeah, he was what, 23. Mm. I mean, they were young and they had no idea what they were doing. In fact, the best. And if you don't have it, I know the doc. Well, the documentary's on the network, so you really don't need to buy the DVD, but. And the matches are, you know, I mean, they're okay. I mean, there's one great squash, early Georgia, like early Arn Anderson. I forgot who his partner is, but Hawk and Animal just absolutely knocked the shit out of him. It's one of the greatest Road Warrior squashes of all time. I mean, they absolutely murdered the two of them. It's fantastic. It's probably the highlight of the matches on the DVD. But the documentary's on the network, so. But I was stunned. Just to recap again, the match is okay. But, I mean, I with no idea in the world Eminem would lose this match. Absolutely not. No way at all. I mean, I understand the nostalgia thing. And you're right. It didn't feel overly nostalgic in the company yet. I think that really wouldn't set in. Because remember, JR, we were still early in the days of DVDs. DVDs really hadn't totally, you know, gone crazy yet. So did Taker's DVD come out yet?
Yeah, that was a 04.
Because I remember you and I went to the – you and I got it one day during lunch at work. I remember we got it. So it had to be 04 and 05. Okay. Like by 05, the DVDs finally started. They finally started to get like the format down of how they can make the DVDs work. So nostalgia wise, they hadn't totally hit that point yet. So I agree with you that, you know, putting on a good match, maybe it wins, you know, a schmaltzy thing, and then maybe they fight again on SmackDown and Eminem wins. But never did I think they would have lost the belts here. No way.
But it ended up being a cool moment. Like I said, the crowd was really hyped for it. And it
was it wasn't a bad decision, right?
Yeah. At the time, it seemed awful, but in retrospect, it all makes sense. So it's
right.
You know, it ends up getting the show off to a really good start. Like the crowd was really into things. It might have really hurt them if they had Eminem kind of squash the excitement. Like once they saw how over he was, they were probably excited that they went that route.
Yeah. No, and again, it was not a decision. I mean, it was a upset or whatever, and then Eminem could probably win him back at some point down the line. It's not the end of the world. It was a good little pop on a historic, on a NWA-based pay-per-view title. You have, one of the best territory teams in the 80s, or at least half of them here. It's not a big deal. So here we go. The faux Legion of Doom are your new WWE Tag Team Champions. So we are 1-for-1 in title changes and a big upset.
Mm-hmm.
So be honest with you, JR, show's off to not a bad start. I was like, wow, it's kind of a cool upset. The match itself was, it was okay. It was definitely a shocking start to the show. All right, next up is a match that after I watched it today, I want to bang my freaking head against a wall. Pretty much. And we're coming for you, Lex Luger and the John. The decision of this match was booked in the John. What's the background, JR?
The background of this one, sir, lots going on. Not really. Yep. Christian was officially drafted to SmackDown on June 30th, immediately put into a match to determine a new champion for the show. During the match, Christian was able to steal a pin on Booker and eliminate him from the bout. On 7/14, Christian and Booker were set for a match. They had a verbal fight the week before. Christian assaulted Booker on the ramp and then easily pinned him, trash-talking Booker's wife Charmel along the way, and a rematch was signed for the pay-per-view. So very bland. It's like they moved Christian over, and they're like, they just didn't see it in him. We talked about this a lot at Vengeance with Mark, and it's like, it feels like such a drop-off. Like, they switch him to the taped, whatever you want to say. They're trying to still make SmackDown mean something, but at the end of the day, it's still if you want to say B brand, A-minus brand, whatever. You move him over there, and if anything, moving there should mean like main event push, because it's a step down and a guy like him, they don't see as a top level player. Why not then push him to the top? And then he just drops to this mid card feud and we go back to the well. These guys had feuded 2 years before, just two veterans rekindling the past war, stuck on this treadmill that Booker's been on for 2 years now. And Christian joins him and all right, feuding over Charmel. It felt like such a disappointment after what Christian had been doing on Raw. And the reactions he was getting, how much the fans were just digging him, how much, how over he was getting, how locked in he was. And it was just disappointing. And, it's something we know well now. But at the time, it was like, come on, guys. Everyone loves Christian. He's so great. But Charmel with Booker full-time now. And Booker's aggressive early on, battering Christian, follows him to the floor, keeps the attack on. Booker, it's a nice slingshot, but Christian whips Booker into the post shoulder first. Christian starts to grind with some stomps and strikes and hooks on a chin lock. Booker comes back with a solid side slam. The crowd backing Christian here and booing during Booker's comeback. Charmel slaps Christian. Booker hits a bookend for a near fall. Christian almost steals it with a roll-up, but Booker comes back with a stiff spinebuster. Christian hits a powerbomb from the corner, but Booker kicks out. And then we get a really strong closing sequence. A lot of power moves and near falls. Booker hits a missile dropkick. Christian gets his foot on the ropes, and then Booker wins with a scissor kick off the middle rope. It was actually a pretty fun, strong match with two vets pushing the limits a bit when they could have just coasted. That was what impressed me the most. Like, they could have just mailed it in here, but they busted it. It felt aimless overall, but they worked hard, made it count. And a good win for Booker, but just flailing for Christian. To go with what he went from to losing to an aimless, dead Booker T, to me, just made no sense. And I don't remember if it was before this or after it. They kind of finally said, all right, good, we'll give Christian his match. And he fought Batista on TV and pretty much just, I don't want to say got squashed, but lost clean, and then that was it. Like, that was the official nail in his coffin. Batista beat him on TV. And that was like the WWE just saying, fuck you, we're never pushing this guy. You can cheer him all you want.
Yeah. This match is a complete disgrace. Not the in-ring part. I will agree with you that they did work their butts off. I'll give both of them credit for that. And I'll give Booker credit for that, too, because at the time, Booker was probably thinking, oh, God, I'm sitting here and spinning my wheels, and I got to face this guy that nobody gives a shit about. Shoot me in the face. But instead, they actually worked their butts off and worked a good match. So that in that instance, I was very entertained today when I watched it, that I enjoyed the match. But I mean, what don't you see in the guy? He's over. He's got some charisma. He's Captain Charisma. And he's a good worker. You could argue, and I remember a lot of people, G used to say this, there are a few people at the time who thought he was a better wrestler than Edge. He was better than Edge.
Oh, yeah. I think, I don't think that was a controversial statement at all. I think it's still true.
You know?
Honestly. Unfortunately, there were people back there saying stuff like, how much does he
weigh? Yeah, exactly. Maybe Christian needed to, do something with, Melina behind Nitro's back.
I know, right?
You know, well, whatever.
That's safe for other guys later. But,
yeah.
But he, we're not even saying he had to be champion per se, but give him a shot. Like we talked about, why not give him the single slot of Vengeance and then Jericho the SummerSlam match? Or let Christian come in here and get the title match? Like, why do we have to go back to what we, we'll talk about it, but why not move him over and keep him heated? At least get some run out of him instead of just throwing him out here and then having him lose and then get smacked by Batista on a TV match and then he's done. I mean, I don't think we barely see him even on pay-per-view again. This really was the nail for him in this run, and it was sad because he was super, super over.
He was definitely super, super over, and look at your roster. I mean, I know, and we'll talk about this match next, but you're telling me that, I know he was in a more high-profile spot on the roster on SmackDown, but you're telling me that you think more of Orlando Jordan than you do Christian?
Right.
I mean, really? Come on. Give me a break. Just made no sense. No sense whatsoever. Now, I'm not saying they're right, but I can see just the way they think at the time. Well, Christian's, he's okay, but look at Batista. You know? It's like apples and oranges.
Right.
Sadly, if you're looking at it visually, JR, Christian actually looks more comparable with Cena.
Mm-hmm.
But you put him next to Batista, and it looks like, it looks like Piper next to the Haiti kid, and that Piper's pit. it's like, it sucks, but that's what it is. And almost putting him to SmackDown was the death knell of him instead of being a career boost. Maybe Christian would have been benefited from getting released. Maybe he should have gone the way of the Dudleys, which really sucks. But, we talk about guys now on the current roster that everybody, cheers and thinks aren't getting a fair shake and everything. 10 years ago, we had the same situation. And it was this guy. And you thought, wow, he's moving over to SmackDown. SmackDown, they give you a little more wiggle room. And here he goes into a, faceless, heatless mid-card stinker feud. They put on a good, 11.5-minute match. It's, it's pretty fun. But in the end, Booker's more important. And before anybody says, and we talked about this a minute ago, before anybody listening goes, well, Booker was set for something, you don't know that. And we'll get into why you don't know that in a few vaults. So whatever you were thinking about 2006, you cannot think right now because you don't know whether that was supposed to happen or not. We'll get to that down the line. So Booker winning does nothing for him because they don't know what they're going to do with him anyway. It sucks. It sucks for Christian. And there were a lot of big Christian fans. I remember, Mike was a big Christian fan. My buddy, John Reckless, was a big fan. G liked Christian. A lot of guys we knew, you, me. And it sucked. It sucked. And,
I think Johnny Aces went up to him and was like, sorry, we got to push my brother.
That's right.
Tag team champion. Not you. By the way, one thing.
P.S., your cunt is in the sink.
Wow, it's like turn back the clock night tonight.
Right.
Oh, God. What's next? Because Lou Albano's a big, fat, sloppy pig. So there you go. Booker T wins. Poor Christian shunted even lower. Don't know which lower you could sink here unless you get jobbed on Velocity or Afterburn or something. So, next up.
The Ultimate Warrior. Fuck it.
Well, you're emptying the iTunes folder, aren't
you? Emptying the holster.
All right, next up, JR, our second title match of the evening. We just mentioned this belt, the United States Championship on the line, and a guy I just mentioned a moment ago, Big O, OJ himself, the part of JBL's now fractured cabinet. I don't know how much of a cabinet left. Orlando Jordan taking on the number one contender. Another guy probably everybody thinks has been shunted down the card, but difference is nobody really cares as long as he's on the show. How do we get to this match, JR? Pretty simple.
Yeah, Chris Benoit defeated Booker T on 7-7 to earn the title
so
match.
So there you go. So, Booker's ahead of Christian in the dump down the card line.
Right.
And before this, match on Heat, if you remember, JR, they showed a clip on the show. OJ was talking to, I don't know who he was talking to. Was it Cole? No.
No, the other guy. The guy that was, Cato Kalin.
Cato fucking Kalin. What's his name?
That's what, I mean, that's what should have happened after this match. He should have jumped out of a fucking Ford Bronco and sped away. Because he basically get away with murder.
He's fucking, fucking thing. Chased by Goldust's fucking Cadillac. Oh, Christ. What the fuck was his name?
They got the U.S. title in the back.
Shit. I don't know. Whatever.
It was Mark Lloyd. Was it Mark Lloyd? No.
No, Mark Lloyd already got released.
Right. It was some fat guy, wasn't it?
Was it, what's his name? I almost said Greg Luzinski. Was it Peter Didinsky? Barry Didinsky.
You can get your very own Orlando Jordan shirt. Comes with a bloody glove.
You get a Christian denim jacket. You know, most denim jackets are just plain. You can have Christian on the back of yours.
So OJ's still somehow a U.S. champion, tries to forge his own identity here, being part of the cabinet. And of course, yes, the mention was that Benoit attacked him during the thing, right? Smacked him across the face or whatever.
Yeah, he slapped him in the face, yeah, during the Didinsky interview.
Yeah, true face. So Benoit's game plan has been to intimidate the youngster. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about Benoit here. And if you remember back to the Rumble with him and Eddie laying into Daniel Pewter, and I don't know, you're starting to see a little bit of the cracks with him as far as the how he looks at rookies and other youngsters, and that seeped in a little bit here too, where the whole storyline is that he's trying to intimidate this guy, and part of that is he just drills him across the face backstage. So Benoit buries a stiff knee, clobbers OJ angrily to start, and then he gets some brutal chops as well. Jordan tries to work the arm, but Benoit picks him apart until he misses a baseball slide and gets shoved into the post. Benoit comes right back with a nasty German that has crushed OJ's neck. Benoit gets a near fall in the Northern Lights. OJ hangs in, goes back to the arm to find the ground Benoit. Jordan plants a nice standing drop kick and is having a nice little showing, I thought. He punches through a Benoit's chop comeback, holding his own. A pretty long match. Edge is on with OJ submissions to work the back. The crowd starts to rally Benoit. Jordan goes up top, but Benoit blocks him, and it's a tight top rope superplex. Benoit has triple Germans and a flying headbutt, but Jordan kicks out. OJ pulls the turnbuckle pad, and then Benoit crashes into it. OJ cradles him and steals the win for the major upset, and many fans are pissed. They felt that Benoit was right back to being hosed. But OJ cheated. You knew the feud was going to continue. Benoit actually gets a standing ovation. Actually, it was a pretty solid match. I think it's Jordan's probably best match. And it was focused. It was basic. They had some big spots and well-timed comebacks. It was feisty. And I thought the finish was fine. Like, if you that wasn't Chris Benoit and that match was exactly the same, I think, you know, you're not as angry about it. I just think people still couldn't stand when Benoit lost, especially to someone perceived like Jordan that was a bum. But I thought the match was fine. Like, I thought Jordan looked okay. I thought they did a fine job for 14 minutes. And the feud's going to continue. And he won cheap. So it's not like he pinned Benoit clean. I mean, you know, he did cheat. So I had actually no problem with this other than being, you know, at the time and the 05 mentality being pissed off. But looking back at it, like, I don't think it was the worst decision or worst match. And I actually think if Benoit has beat him clean, I think people would have came away with more respect for Jordan, saying, wow, he really hung with Benoit. That was a really good match. I'm glad Benoit won. I think Benoit losing like made everyone think this was a stinker because it goes 14 minutes and they think that Jordan sucks.
And I thoroughly disagree. I was pleasantly surprised that the match was that good when I watched it again today. I thought it was a very good match. I think Orlando Jordan was a collegiate wrestler, which I didn't realize. So he's not exactly a scrub in that aspect. But there was definitely some backlash from the fans that they thought Benoit, you know, was not what he's now, like the grizzled old guy putting people over. I mean, that did irk people.
Well, I think they saw the move from Raw almost like a demotion in some ways. And then having him, you know, no one liked Orlando Jordan. He had so many things against him. Like, he was tied in with JBL, who everyone hated still at the time, or at least had hated for so long.
Right.
You know, he kind of won the U.S. title cheaply. There were so many other really highly touted wrestlers that could have been champion. So I think he just had a lot against him. And I'm not saying he was great. Look, I mean, this match probably would have been a lot better if I had someone that was better in the ring in it. But I didn't think he was like trash. I don't think he was absolute garbage.
No.
And I thought he held his own here. Like, I thought he looked fine. It didn't feel like a Benoit carry job. It felt like he at least hung in with him.
Yeah, considering he was in the carrying spot, or the heel dictating spot, and I thought it was fine. I mean, the length did surprise me. I didn't think they'd get, over 14 minutes, but it was really good. I thought they told a good story, and I give a thumbs up to Orlando Jordan. I mean, it was a much better match than I thought, and it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't just Benoit carrying a stiff for 15 minutes. It was absolutely not.
Right.
And I thought it was a little over the top. Benoit had to get the standing ovation at the end of the match after he got helped up. And that was a little bit overkill. I mean, when they did it at the 03 Rumble, after he lost to Kurt, that's one thing, because that was an awesome match for the WWE Championship that he never won, kind of thing. I mean, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But we lost the U.S. title, whoopee-doo. I mean, they made it like, so what a great ovation for Chris Benoit for such a great match for the U.S. title. You know what I mean? I'm not discounting the U.S. title. I'm just saying, why did we need to have like this, eulogy for the, after the match? I mean,
right.
I thought that was a little bit over the top, but the match was great. I thought it was very good. I mean, you could argue it was the match of the show.
No.
I mean, one match probably does it better.
Oh, it definitely does it better. that's way better.
You could say this is maybe the number two match of the night.
This and the tag probably clock in as the second best.
I like the match a lot.
Crazy. Yeah, it was solid. I'm not going to, you have it in your top 10 for match of the year over here. But
No.
But
I mean, it was a good match. But the ending was a little bit shocking. I wouldn't say I was pissed, but yeah, I think...
I mean, there were spots in the middle. When Jordan started doing the submissions and, like, working the back, it got a little bland. Like if it was maybe 3 or 4 minutes shorter, or that was different, the heat segment might have been taking this even up a level. To me, them just being, like, a rock-solid good match was, like, huge, because no one expected that. If you told someone before the match that it was going to go 14 minutes and Jordan would win, they would have thought it was probably gonna be absolute garbage. But I thought it was fine.
Yeah. No, I thought it was fine, too. Was I shocked that he won? A little bit. Not totally, because I was anticipating... This seems like a feud that was anticipating a rematch at SummerSlam. So I wasn't totally surprised that Orlando Jordan won, because I thought, again, this felt like a feud that you could extend to the two-brand show the following month. So I wasn't totally surprised. Plus, he won cheap, so also didn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
But a good match nonetheless. So Orlando Jordan shockingly retains his United States Championship with a hard fought win. He did win, he did cheat, but he's a heel. But a hard fought win over Chris Benoit, who's very mad. Chris Benoit was very angry. Next up, a match that probably a couple weeks earlier was a completely different booking situation, and then 2 weeks later the whole thing changed. But we still need a number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship at SummerSlam, or number one contender, period. What happens here?
Muhammad Hassan and Khosrow Daivari were drafted to SmackDown on June 23rd, and it was mildly questionable gimmick exploded into one of the most controversial angles of all time. On 6:30, Hassan and Undertaker had a verbal altercation that ended in a Daivari chair shot following a Taker chokeslam. On July 4th, SmackDown taping, Teddy Long announced that Hassan would wrestle the Undertaker at the pay-per-view, and ordered Daivari to compete against the Dead Man that very night. During the match, Hassan appeared on the ramp and dropped to his knees to pray. It was then that a group of men in camo pants, black shirts, and ski masks appeared and assaulted the Undertaker with clubs and choked him with piano wire. In this instance of the worst possible timing of all time, just hours before the show was set to air on TV, there were severe terrorist bombings in London. With very little time to make the edits, UPN affiliates in the U.S. and The Score in Canada aired the show as is, with additions of advisory warnings throughout. After many major news outlets picked up the story, UPN caved and said it would monitor the angle and requested that Hassan not appear the following week. WWE had Hassan cut a promo with the following week's tapings, but UPN refused to air it, so it was added on WWE.com. In the promo, Hassan claimed he's being unfairly pegged as a terrorist and even called out a New York Post writer by name and took umbrage to the writer, claiming the attack was perpetrated by Arabs in ski masks. On the 7/14 SmackDown, a lawyer representing Hassan claimed his client refused to appear on TV until the pay-per-view due to this unfair treatment. As the weeks wore on, it leaked out that UPN no longer wanted Hassan to appear on its network and basically killed the character off for good. It threw a serious wrench into the plans because, like you mentioned, Scott, Hassan was actually scheduled to win this match and then face and maybe even defeat Batista at SummerSlam in Washington, D.C. Weeks after the match, Teddy Long officially kicked Hassan off SmackDown, and Doty buckled to the pressure and eliminated the character. Despite fan backlash, Hassan and Daivari both sent the developmental. Hassan was released in September. Final record, 1-3, would leave the business afterwards to focus on acting. So, again, the New York Post, TV Guide, and Variety, a UPN spokeswoman said the network reserves the right to preempt SmackDown but didn't think it was necessary at the time. Doty spokesperson Gary Davis was quoted numerous times in both articles, as well as Kevin Dunn. "We feel bad about the timing of the segment," said Davis, and Kevin Dunn added, "We're very proud of our product. We try to be sensitive with everything we portray, but there's got to be protagonists and antagonists on our show." In my thoughts, and this is Sutton's thoughts, so we get...
You sound like Outback Jack.
And here's Sutton's thoughts. We'll give him a little platform as well. Of course, he was in the UK and gutted when something like this goes down. But in his thoughts on UPN had hours ahead of time to make the decision. Here in the UK, everything happens in the news, which caused upset. And it happens in a program. They always say, due to such and such in the news, a scheduled program will air at a later date. So he could have advised UPN in the best fairness to take the segment out, put an In the Vault segment, which was a weekly edition on SmackDown anyway, or do something else. And of course, on 7/21, like we mentioned, UPN said, "We don't want this guy around." And it was one of those catch 22, because it's like, you didn't really want to defend WWE with all this. But on the flip side, I mean, it was bad. Like, the timing wasn't really their fault. They didn't
Absolutely not.
Time to maybe send a revised segment out, or, I mean, I don't know. It was a tough situation. It really was. But there were many that thought they shouldn't back down and that they should forge ahead. And in some ways, it was actually really good, you know, heat for the guy, where they could have kept this thing going and had him just be on the website and on pay-per-view and maybe turn him to a real heat magnet, right? Like, screw you. I'm not fine. You don't want me on your TV show. I'll go on pay-per-view and get paid when I'm going to wrestle. Like, they could have still done that stuff. But, you know, at the time, I think a big key was, too, because I don't know if you remember the huge, part of the business side that was coming up for them was TV negotiations in 05. So I think part of that was they didn't really, you know, they had to weigh their angles. Did they weigh their odds? Did they really want to take a chance and piss off executives by forging ahead with this Hassan thing at a time where they were looking for possibly a new network or some big money from, you know, USA or TNN or Spike, wherever the heck it was now. So that's a big part of it as well.
I mean, think about it. Look back 14 years earlier, and look at the flack that they got for Sergeant Slaughter. Mm-hmm. It's almost the same thing. I mean,
but no, Slaughter never had anything like this happen.
No, but I mean, Slaughter got, I mean, back then, don't forget, it was still, you know, big time kayfabe. He was getting death threats. I mean, you know, it was, just imagine. Well, don't forget, there was that Superstars interview where Slaughter was supposed to burn the American flag, not a Hulk Hogan
those
T-shirt.
Those were all their decisions. Like, I mean, Hassan has a point here, because whoever said they were Arabs in masks, like, they, you know, they always just said sympathizers. That's what Cole always said, and he says it here.
Yeah,
like,
he
they never
say,
said
yeah.
terrorists or so
Muslims.
People, you know,
or
I mean,
right.
Look, it looked bad, but it wasn't. To me, this wasn't even close to burning the American flag on TV. And I don't this the whole the angle with them, you know, choking Taker wasn't the problem. It may have annoyed people, but it was the timing with the bombings that did them in. Yep. That was what killed them. Again, still, it's disappointing to see how they took this angle as of what it was originally supposed to be. And they had no one to blame but themselves by making him seem like a standard Muslim terrorist that should be, you know, prejudiced against. So, I mean, that's their fault. They could have taken the character in a different regard, and that could have continued here. They could have had him go on WWE.com and apologize. Look, you know, things get away from me. I got turned like this by you. You know, this isn't me. And, you know, they could have tried to salvage it that way, but I think they looked at the landscape and said, you know what? You know, he's not that good. So he's not going anywhere, whatever. Like, they probably would have had him lose anyway at SummerSlam. So I think they weighed the odds and they weighed his future and just figured between the TV deal and his lack of ability. I think they just figured it wasn't worth it.
Mm. For those that may not know what we're talking about or may not remember, it was July 7th, 2005, so it was 3 weeks before this show. There were suicide bomb attacks in central London, targeted civilians, causing the public transport system during that morning's rush hour. Four Islamist extremists separately detonated three bombs in quick succession aboard London Underground trains. 52 killed, 700 injured. UK's worst terrorist incident since the Lockerbie bombing in 1988. So, just in reference, it was a big deal.
Right.
This wasn't just like a fucking briefcase, random package found in a subway or anything. This was a big deal.
Oh, it was a huge deal. So, I mean, they should have had a little bit more tone, and they could have just, ran it. They could have done something. They had enough time, but luckily for them, it didn't happen when the show was on or anything. So, but unluckily for them, it happened in a weird window. Like, I feel like if it happened that morning, maybe they would have done something. But I feel like it happened at a time where they were kind of stuck in between. Like,
right?
What do we do? We don't kind of have time to do this, but we kind of do, and we're probably gonna be screwed either way. What do we do? What do we do? And in their mind, they probably figured it was pushing one of their top matches for the pay per view. So. I think I just figured maybe they'd fly under the radar enough, but it was bad. It was bad luck and it was a stupid plan.
What's funny is they were
to blame and not to blame at the same time.
Right. Now I'm looking at the names of the four perpetrators who were killed as well. One guy's first name is Mohammed, and one guy's last name wasn't Hassan. It was Hussein.
Yeah. Well,
so it's freakily close.
Right. Regardless, it was bad timing for them. Yeah. But again, they shouldn't have put themselves in this situation by having guys that look like terrorists. Come out and back the Muslim guy. I mean, that was just, they can try and explain it away, but it's clear what they were going for. So a big step and push for Hassan, set for a mega push on SmackDown. Interesting use of Taker and a crazy build with the mask guys and all that. So made the angle feel a little bit too real. And like I said, kind of took the original spirit of Hassan and really buried it for good. Hassan gets carried in a sedan by the sedan. How do you pronounce it? Sedan, I guess. Muhammad Sedan.
Yeah.
By the sympathizers. Cole mentioned speculation that this could actually be Hassan's final match. So they call it out. They say due to media pushing them that Hassan may actually be taken off TV. And Hassan actually vows to leave SmackDown if he loses. And that he says he'll win the title if he wins. So rumors that he may become pay-per-view only. Those were definitely rumors at the time. And Hassan cuts a long promo before the match. And he's almost set up like a lumberjack match with the sympathizers on the outside. So Taker gets his power offense to start, uses his usual attack. He hits the old school. Taker gets dumped to the floor. All the sympathizers jump him and followed by Hassan using the steps and strikes on the floor to lay into Taker. Cole says Hassan said he would do it alone, and Taz says he lied, just like he always does. Turns into a slugfest as Taker comes back, slides to the floor, and decks a sympathizer, but a second one chokes him with the panel wire again. Hassan hooks down a camel clutch. Taker powers out with an electric chair. Sympathizers all start crashing the ring. Taker wipes them all out and wins with a big choke slam. They all attack and beat down Taker. Taker powers up and runs through all of them using a chair. Choke slams one on the floor. Crowd is just going nuts here. He tombstones another one. Then he waxes Daivari. Hassan crawls away. Taker stalks him, choke slams him on the ramp, and then power bombs him through a hole in the stage to end his push for good and pretty much just kill off the character. A huge drop off for Hassan, thanks to all the blowback, but probably for the best, since the character, they were going to end up doing something really dumb at some point with this guy. So it was probably for the best in their own best interest that this happened for them and made the decision, for them, because they didn't seem to be the types that could help themselves from doing something stupid. So from, being prepped for main eventing the second biggest show of the year, down to getting thrown through a hole by Taker and ending his career. Pretty big drop for Hassan. I thought the match was kind of blah. It was, Taker just battling a bunch of heels. It was almost felt like 95 again. I'm kind of curious how Hassan would have won. I'm guessing it would have been heavy interference if they had gone that route. But,
right.
I don't know. What'd you think of it? I didn't really enjoy it that much.
Nah, it was, it just had a stain on it. And it sucks because,
I don't know if that would even matter.
Yeah, I mean...
Hassan, I mean, when it comes down to it, Hassan wasn't that good. Like, he was a great talker, and he had a pretty good presence, but he sucked in the ring. I mean...
Oh, no, he was terrible.
What many people always said was that Daivari should have been the wrestler, and Hassan should have been the talker. Like, that was always what a lot of people say, because Daivari was superior in the ring, and Hassan was a much better talker. So, that was always
what you heard. And a lot of people thought that, the Hassan guy, Mark Copani, was just there to get his name out and eventually be an actor.
Right,
and he had no... he had no heart for the business, and right. Daivari so should have been the guy.
And who knows how long this would have lasted anyway then.
Right.
I think in the end it's for the best. I mean, you know, it's really awful circumstances, but they probably would have done something done. And if Hassan, you know, his heart wasn't really in it and he sucked anyway, and they botched it. They had a chance to do something different and unique, and they just went down the hackney-eyed road, and they just kind of ruined it from day one.
Yeah. So he's gone. He ends up, Kopani relocated to L.A. He wanted to be an actor and a screenwriter. He helped a fellow alumnus, a wrestler that would be on TV and then eventually be off, but leave the business, develop a screenplay. He then came back to New York, completed his degree, wanted to be a teacher. And apparently he is a teacher at Hannibal High School in Oswego County, New York, up near kind of near Cooperstown. Interesting. So maybe he's a teacher somewhere. Maybe he walks into the class
young,
with that
young,
music.
Or he has a picture with like the head in the head of the class music walking down the street and walks in. Dennis Blundin and
Dennis Blundin.
Arvid Endingen.
Arvid Endingen. Oh, what the hell was her name? Simone.
Well, yeah, but then
the blonde chick.
The chick that Tyson punched around. What's her name?
Robin Givens.
Yeah.
Tyson punched around. And then Simone was the blonde, and then you know,
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I'm confident we already did this on one of these episodes. I know we talked about the ball, but Bernadette Mira, Sarah Nevins, Maria Borges, Arvid Engen, Darlene Merriman, Simone Foster, Jawaharlal Cordrahuri.
Jawaharlal, I remember him. That's
Alan
right.
Pinkard, Eric Maradin, Dennis Blunden, Janice Lazzarato, Alex Torres, Vicky Armory, TJ Jones, Jasper Wong, and Aristotle McKenzie.
Hmm.
And of course, Dr. Harold Samuels was the principal.
Yep. And the teacher was
Charlie Moore.
Charlie Moore.
Billy McGregor.
Well, he was the second teacher. The first teacher was
Charlie. Charlie was first. Billy was the last season.
Yeah, Charlie was Howard Hessman. He was Dr. Johnny on
KRP. And then Billy McGregor retired, and now he fights in the UFC. Big fight coming up.
he's fighting.
Big fight happened.
Did fight. So there you go. Taker is the number one contender, and he's just like, all right, let's get this
over. You failed my class. I'm going to beat you in the ring.
Blunden. Oh, Christ. All right.
Billy Conley.
Okay. Next up, we needed to get some humor after this debacle we just watched.
All right, let's do this one.
Yeah, let's get this one out of the way. We have some debuts here, guys that we have never seen or we saw at another pay-per-view, but this is them off mask.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this new little faction now, JR.
So the Mexicools, made up of Juventud Guerrera, Psicosis, and Super Crazy, something we probably never thought we'd see. Juventud made his pro debut in AAA. After bouncing around the Mexican Indies, he would migrate to ECW before joining Conan and his band of luchadors in WCW in the summer of 96. He would make his debut on the 826 Nitro, would spend the next 2 years tussling with the fellow cruiserweights, wowing the crowd, kicking off TV shows and pay-per-views. On 1-8-98, Guerrera would defeat Ultimo Dragon to win the cruiserweight title, but his reign ended 1 week later at the hands of Rey Mysterio. At that year's Super Brawl, he lost his mask in a match with Chris Jericho, got his revenge later in the year when he defeated Jericho to win the Cruiserweight strap for the second time. While rehabbing an injury, he began a role as a color commentator on Thunder, ripping off The Rock and calling himself The Juice. After a run as part of the Filthy Animals, Hoovy found himself in trouble in October 2000 during a tour of Australia. Hoovy was arrested after running around a hotel lobby naked and screaming. It was later surmised that he was under the influence of PCP. He was released, spent some time in the indie circuit, stint in TNA, and then inked a deal in June.
Dan McGinn do that at the Rumble?
Made his debut on 618 Velocity, defeating Funaki, yes. Actually, I kind of picture this like more of like a D'Amato thing. Hey, I'm going out to get some bacon.
I'm going outside to get some bacon for the hoods. Oh, good God.
All right, so the Mexicools have formed the Juice. Blue Meanie's final pay-per-view appearance. After this match, Meanie's short-term contract expired and moved on to the indie scene, where he still competes in this day. But if you remember, they had signed him as an apology for JBL punching the shit out of him back at One Night Stand, so they let him hang around for a couple months. Yep. Our friend Stevie Richards makes his final pay-per-view appearance here as well. Oh. Would move on to the new ECW in 2006. We'll get there. Remain there, losing 5 TV matches, had surgery in late 07 to repair his voice box, recover and return to action early 08, got a small push, Didn't fare too well. Be a jobber to the stars until being released in August. Joined TNA early in 09, debuting as Abyss's therapist, Dr. Stevie. Entered a lengthy storyline with Abyss. Still wrestles, of course, or wrestled with TNA, and then bounced around, did a little bit ROH, some other indie stuff, and of course now is heavily involved in DDP Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Did a great interview with us way back in the day, and another one with Kevin Kelly, of course, last year as well. So, record is small, 3-3, even though he was around from 99 to 08. I mean, I think he ended up having a long run, longer run than anyone would have expected when they signed him in 99, and he came in, remember the Blonde Bitch project and all that stuff.
Yes.
With Meany. I don't think anyone could have expected, you know, he'd hang around since 2008 when he first joined. But good on Steve. He had a long, lengthy run, went through a lot of different gimmicks and changes, but definitely had a, you know, better stint than probably many would have predicted at the time.
Trivia question for you.
Yes.
Can you tell me the numbered episode that we interviewed Stevie Richards?
All right. So I have a decent idea.
Okay.
Because I know it was August of 2011, because we had the interview the night of Josh Richards' birthday dinner at El Tapatio, and I had to leave the dinner because we had this interview scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
So we started in February. That's how many months? February, March, April, May, June, July, August. So that's 7 months. We were averaging about about 8 a month. So I'm going to say it's in the 50s. I'm going to say 54.
Ooh.
53.
55.
Ah!
Very good. El Tapatio, that's that place that's at the, yeah, right? Is that place at the bottom?
It closed after we, it opened when we moved there, and then it closed when we left.
And do you remember the number episode that Kevin Kelly had him on?
Was it this year? It was early this year, wasn't it?
It was earlier this year. Yeah. It was actually Dr. G's birthday, February 25th.
All right, so we'll come up on 50. I'm going to say it was 29.
Correct.
Wow. That was just a total guess.
Very good. Yes. So Stevie Richards, unprecedented.
Get that, Chad Campbell.
Twice on the Place to Be network. Episode 55 of us. Episode 29 with Kevin. So there you
go. 6/23, a Paul London Chavagura masked Super Crazy, Psychosis, and Juventud Guerrero rode down to the ring on riding lawnmowers. After assaulting both men, Juve announced they were not just toilet washers. They were tired of working for the gringos. Tired of working for the gringos. They were going to take over.
Such a highly rated show.
And the gringos would then be working for them. He also said they weren't Mexicans, they were Mexicools. The next week, the Mexicools interrupted another London Guerrero match, assaulting both men. The assaults and victories would pile up as the Mexicools gained steam. Also, the riding lawnmowers, eventually christened Juan Deers. This match was announced on WWE.com, confirmed on 7/21. And this feels like Bizarro World, like completely out of left field, out of nowhere after one night stand. Interesting hires that they stuck with the BWO thing, that the Mexicools even exist, that they brought these guys in and teamed them up. And the whole thing is odd. I mean, it's a cool group, but awfully racist. I mean, just really racist.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I don't know. I feel like they could have done this gimmick in a much different way and really had it pop and be something cool. No pun intended, but
they were just toilet washers.
It's brutal.
Good grief.
BWO theme is still quite awesome.
Yes,
Nova's bandana keeps coming off, so that's a giveaway there. Of course, he's Simon Dean doing double duty. He was working as Simon Dean and Nova many times on the same night.
Yep.
Pretty basic tag stuff playing to the crowd. The BWO dominates early and then dumps Mixcools. it's late. It's like a rap group, the Mixcools, to the floor.
Yes.
The Mixcools catch Nova with a shot to the ribs and then start working the arm. Crazy looked the best, I thought, of the Mixcools, crisp and fast. Stevie gets a tag, runs through, everyone gets a near fall. The crowd is just dead for this. Stevie, Super Crazy hits the moonsault, and Psychosis hits the top rope leg drop for the win. I thought this was really disappointing. The crowd didn't dig it at all. When they announced this, it was like, oh, cool, they're giving these six guys a pay-per-view match. Like, you would have never thought this would ever happen. This was something that felt completely like it happened because of the success of One Night Stand, and it was really neat, and then it bombs hard. It's like just awful. I mean, the BWO, this is probably what led partially to them not keeping Meany around. This crowd has farted all over this. Mexicools, I thought their win at least made sense. You could tell they had more of a future. As the BWO was strictly comedy, and the Mexicools at least had potential as competitors, but watching this again, it was really bland. And again, I felt bad for them how much the crowd just was not into it.
It's a shame because I thought they were actually a good little trio. I wasn't even, you know, racist overtones aside. They were a funny bunch. I like the Wandeers, and I mean they took every stereotype and threw them on these
the
guys.
The Juice and the Funny Bunch. That's kind of like Juice Mark and the Funny Mark Bunch. And the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, and I mean they would have been perfect in like you know WWE like 91. You know,
I don't think that gimmick was ever perfect.
Well, that's true. But back in those days, nobody really cared as much as they probably cared by the mid-2000s. But I mean, yeah, the match was just a complete and utter stinker. The BWO was just so played out, and like you said, at least the Mexicos had some talent, and as heels, they had a little more, you know, they had a little more staying power. Let's just move on. There's really not much more to say. The crowd. I'd say this is the one part of the match where the crowd was pretty flat, and usually Buffalo crowds are pretty good.
And it sucks because this is kind of something I like to see more of, and felt like it was the death knell when it was this awful match, and like it felt like they weren't really ready for this. I mean,
they were cooked. Yeah,
and the BWO was it's too bad because they could have maybe had a place somewhere, but
where? Who knows? But
yeah.
But they
this felt like okay, internet fans, here you go, and then they bombed. So it's kind of like
That's all right. So there you go, Mexico's win, and that's nice. All right, why don't we take a break? We've got three matches left. Probably the two of the matches, the top two storylines on the show at the moment, and then we get a little eye candy. What do you think so far? Not horrendous.
No, it's been fine so far.
Been okay.
It's gonna be a show that's made or broken by the top matches.
The top two matches.
But the undercard's been fine.
But first, a myriad of words in honor of the late, great Lord Alfred Hayes. Because, by the following.
Well, that didn't surprise me a bit because Lou Albano is a big, fat, sloppy pig.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here. On the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Nation, we are back looking at Great American Bash 2005. Quick notes on PlaceMation.com. Be sure to vote in the ongoing PTBN holiday extravaganza tournaments. We're whittling down the field. All wraps up on Christmas Day, so get your votes in, see if your favorites have advanced, and see where we stand. Of course, check out all of our archives, all of our ongoing series of Network Adventure, My Thoughts, I Think, Scott, our Vintage Vault Refresh series, Glenn's Always Weekly Walk Around the Web. Tons of podcasts for you. Brian Bayless always has his Raw recap as well every Tuesday morning. Subscribe to both feeds in iTunes, the Place to Be podcast feed and the PWO PTBN feed. Rate us on there. Give us some stars. Leave us some notes. And, of course, with the holidays coming to an end, as you continue to shop and get your last-minute deals in, when you're heading over to Amazon, visit PlacementNation.com. First, it is literally one click. You click the Amazon banner, and then it takes you to Amazon itself, and you can do all your shopping. You do nothing else. You just do that every time you go, that one extra stop, and it kicks a little bit back to us. So if you do that for us, we'll love you forever. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, place number 2 Be Nation on Twitter. So be sure to check out everything, as well as the Kevin Kelly feed. I always forget to plug that one on iTunes. He has his own feed if you want just the Kevin Kelly show showing up. So there you go. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're home for everything pop culture.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Our next match here at the 2005 Great American Bash is probably the number 2 storyline and feud of the show, and that is the continuing war between Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. But now suddenly JR takes a rather bizarre turn.
Bizarre turn. How bizarre. On 5/26, the SmackDown stars, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, were set to compete in a battle royal. On the way to the ring, Eddie jumped Rey and brutalized him with a chair. Rey got his revenge by hitting the ring and eliminating Eddie from the battle royal. Rey would strike again on 6/16, assaulting Eddie with a chair after Eddie won a match with Paul London. The two met in the ring on 6/23, with Eddie picking up yet another win over his former friend. A week later, Eddie put a demented plan into action. He came to the ring and requested that footage of a recent trip to a playground be aired. The footage showed Eddie talking to Rey's son Dominic, giving him candy, and asking him if he liked secrets and bedtime stories. He then said it was time to share his secret with the world. Rey came to the ring, and Eddie demanded Rey to hit him, but he wouldn't do it. Eddie started smacking him around as Rey begged Eddie not to share the secret. Eddie took some candy from his pocket, crumbled it, and shoved it into Rey's face. And on 7/7, Eddie forced Rey to team with him against Eminem. Eddie stood on the apron as Rey was beaten down and pinned by the tag champs. The next week, Eddie was about to tell the secret, but was interrupted by his wife, Vicky, and his two daughters. She begged Eddie not to tell the story and hurt Rey, who she said was a good man, and that angered Eddie. Eddie snapped, grabbed his wife, and stormed off. Backstage, Eddie demanded they leave and forced them to drive away. Later that night, Eddie told Rey if he could beat him at the Bash, he would bury the secret forever. But if Eddie could finally defeat Rey, the secret would be revealed. So last time we had a secret, Kane showed up. but it's been a long time since then. I thought Vicky was actually looking pretty good at this point. I don't remember her being that svelte at this era.
No, I didn't either.
A year later, she's... we know why. What would cause her to probably get to that point. But
right.
I don't know. What did you think of this thing heading in here? Because up to this point, the feud's been great. Like, it's all been about Eddie just being pissed he couldn't beat Rey and just snapping because of it. And now, you know, from all accounts, they were writing this thing. They wanted it to be a telenovela, so they were really heading that way. And SmackDown had a very big Latin, you know, viewership, so they thought this might be something that connected with them. What were your thoughts? Did you like it? Were you concerned in any way?
SmackDown brought to you by Univision. Telemundo. Remember the, what was the show? was it Astrovision, or it was one of the Spanish channels, and it had like the luchas. It was like the early 2000s. Astrovision.
AstroStars, was that it?
Was it AstroStars? That's what it was. That's right.
Yeah, I don't think it was like Astrovision.
Astrovision. I was a little leery because I was enjoying the feud of just Eddie being crazy and nuts and just wanting to beat Ray and can't. But now we got to deal with like weird secrets. And I mean, I understand if they were going to be the second big feud on the show, you kind of had to give a little teeth to the feud. But I don't know. Astros. That's what it was. Super Astros.
Dope.
Astro wrestling. Astro Vision.
Astro Stars.
Houston Astros.
You can stop typing, schmuck.
It had Astros in it. I was a little leery because again, we understand that for it to be the second biggest storyline on the show, the you know, there had to be some meat and potatoes to it, some teeth to the storyline. I get that.
Well, I think the Latin audience was the big part of it. Like, this is a, you know, highly featured, and I think that was a big piece that they were really drawing that crowd in.
Yeah, and this does have that, you're right, it did have that kind of, you know, Eric Estrada, you know, weird, not weird, but, you know, very melodramatic, you know, romance, or not romance, but kind of that family.
My secret is that I chaturbate, Holmes.
pound cake. So, you know, I understand. I understand the thinking behind it. You're exactly right. That's exactly what it was. I was just a little leery that they were entering waters that they weren't totally familiar with, and it was going
to
go down a weird path.
I think people wanted to feel comforted by the fact that they were writing it. I think it's similar to the Jericho Christian stuff, and even back to the Sheriff Austin. So it's like, I don't know, there's some level of comfort. Well, okay, the guys are writing it, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to be great, but it feels better that at least you know that versus like the writers putting them in the spot. So I think that was a little bit more reassuring anyway. The feud continues. Things have been moved up a notch. Eddie has slowly snapped. Vicky debuts, like we mentioned. Dominic's actually sitting at ringside for this. Eddie's just a great douchebag heel. He's standing in the center of the ring, and he makes Ray shake his hand to show your son we're friends, you know. Then he hugs him. Like what an asshole, right? And then Ray just jumps Eddie. Eddie hangs in. They trade strikes and holds in a flurry. Ray crotches Eddie on the top rope to cut off his assault, takes him down with a hurricanrana. Eddie catches Ray off the top and tries to splash mountain bomb, but Ray slips free and hits a 619, a West Coast pop for an early near fall. Eddie wipes out Ray and then goes to talk to Dominic and then uses him as a shield. More douchebag stuff. Ray begs him to stop. Eddie puts down Dominic and then nails Ray. And I thought it was a good job of the announcers to lay out there quietly and kind of let that all unfold. Cole and Taz have really grown as a team in that regard. They're really good at that. Eddie hits a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker in the ring. Eddie's vicious, hard-hitting offense, crisp and stiff. Eddie fends off a short comeback attempt and hooks a gory special. Eddie again visits Dominic, allowing Ray to come back in and grab some near falls. Mysterio hits a 619, but misses a leg drop. Eddie starts to go for a frog splash, but comes down and messes with Ray instead. He kicks him in the head and then drags him up for a second set of three amigos before the third one, Ray is limp, so Eddie releases him and stares at Dominic. Eddie hits a nasty brainbuster while glaring at Dominic, and Eddie hits a stiff frog splash, but he has a lackadaisical cover where he just lays on it, and Ray quickly rolls him up, steals the win. I thought that was an awesome finish. It paid off everything with Ray and how the frustration just keeps building with Eddie, where he dominated the whole match, mocked the kid, was ready to tell the secret, and then one small fuck up at the end, and Ray beats him again. Just really, you know, driving it deeper into him. So Ray and Dominic celebrate. Eddie just stews. Great match between the two. Hard-hitting offense, a good storyline. I didn't think the Dominic stuff overwhelmed them at all. I thought they mixed it in well. It didn't feel like it, you know, think back to like the Eugene stuff with Triple H and Benoit and how that just like overtook the whole angle and match. This felt woven in more, which was cool. So I love this match. I thought it was great. I think I liked Judgment Day a little bit better. I think they're both better than Mania, but we've gotten some really good matches out of this feud.
Well, there's no doubt because they're both great workers and they have great chemistry. I mean, you're talking about chemistry that goes back, you know, 8 years. So that you'll never, when you see the two in the ring, you know, you're going to get at least 3 stars. It's just a question of, you know, what's going to be, what psychology are we going to tell in this match? And Dominic sitting there was not a bad thing. Like you said, it didn't totally, you know, and some guys just know how to do their job well. And Eddie was a really good, fun babyface. You know, with the dancing and the car and the cool music and the t-shirts and everything. But when he wants to turn up the douche factor, I don't think anybody is a better douche than he is when he wants to be. And when it's a main part of the storyline. I mean, we're talking Pillman levels of doucheness. Mm-hmm. And when you reach Pillman levels of doucheness, you're doing your job right.
I mean, just
you
know? That moment at the beginning when Dominic's watching and he's like, shake my hand so your son knows we're friends or whatever.
Yeah.
That was like such an asshole move, you know?
It's like, I know.
Just put Ray in this awful position. I thought that was really, like, this really great heel work.
It really was great. It was. And the end just totally, you kind of knew it was coming because that's like one of the big, sneak pins when you have right. someone hooked like that, and it makes the guy easy to it'd be used in a main event match about 3 years later too.
And they built to it so well with Ray going limp and the you know and he hit him with the brainbuster and the frog splash and like you just okay this is it finally and then he just sneaks it in. I loved the finish. I thought it was really really good. You know, we'll talk about it on our next show, but I love the you know when he ends up doing what he does anyway. I lied, you know.
Yeah, I lied. Yeah,
does it anyway.
So great. We'll get more into that in the next vault. But
it's been a good feud of the year probably so far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it does this last chapter gets a little ridiculous, but I think they do kind of go over the rails a bit. But that's then. To this point,
I mean, if you know, we had to choose between 05 and 04's in you know weird family storyline, I'll take this over the Kane, Lita, Snitsky.
Well, yeah, obviously
you know, Edge stuff any day. I mean, this is far superior.
Rape is good. Rape works. You know, it's just such a mess. So Rey Mysterio now is like 26-0 in his career against, which is not exactly true. Eddie has beaten Rey, mm-hmm. but
not in WWE though.
Not in WWE. It's kind of like Andre's undefeated kind of thing, you know. So there you go. Rey Mysterio wins again, but this feud clearly still has legs left, and we'll get more into it at SummerSlam. All right, next up, we take a breather from the hardcore serious stuff and get into some something a little fun and a little pleasing to the eyes. Our girl Melina, her second appearance this evening, of course, in our opener, her boys lost the WWE Tag Team titles to the Legion of Doom, the sequel. Why is she back out here, JR?
Titillating.
Mm-hmm.
On 7/14, Tori and Melina got into an argument backstage. Melina called Tori a washed-up has-been and challenged her to her match. Tori requested that the bout be a bra and panties match. Melina claimed that nobody would ever see her in her underwear, and nobody would remember Tori after she took her out. The next week, it was announced that Candice Michelle, who had just been drafted over, would be the guest referee for the match. Melina attacked Candice in the ring, but Tori made the save. Yep, this is what we're getting here. So Candice is the ref. Random mix. Melina kind of turned night in many ways. First bra and panties match in a while. I don't remember when the heck our last one was. I know we had the lingerie match at WrestleMania 20. I mean, it feels like it's been years since the bra and panties.
There had to have been one with, I mean... Was there one with Tori and Dawn Marie?
I don't think so. I feel like there hasn't been one since like the Stacy stuff, like way back. I might be
during the
I can think of
the
a few guys
invasion.
That maybe they'll point it out. I don't know. busy night for Melina. Tori's still hanging around SmackDown and random feuds. Melina, her top gets ripped off first, but then she kicks Tori to the floor before she can take her pants off. And Melina's wearing these weird, like baggy workout pants or something.
I know, yeah. Very weird.
Tori's top comes off, and it's real basic diva stuff, just punch and kick. Melina jaws with Candice and then hits a hot shot and pulls Tori's pants off for the win. Tori's still smoking hot. Throwaway match. Melina salvages her night with a win. Melina decks Candice, but then Candice and Tori team up and yank Melina's pants off, and the Candice strips too for the hell of it. So it's a lot of fluff. At least it was kept fairly short. The match was terrible, but just 3:51. And we saw some tits, we saw some ass, so makes some fans happy. Cools off after the you know levity, or we needed some levity after the heaviness of the match before it. So
right,
it's fine. It served its purpose.
Is this is this Candice's debut? Should we talk that?
Do we cover her like in the? Was she part of the Diva Search?
No. In 04?
All right, we can talk about her.
No, she wasn't in that. I don't think she was.
She auditioned and didn't crack the top 10. Okay, yeah. We'll talk about her. Started her modeling career in 1999, moving from Milwaukee to Los Angeles, appeared in numerous bodybuilding and car magazines, as well as being named Cyber Girl of the Week for Playboy June 02. Also, and this was, makes her run kind of surprising. It never would have happened like years later. Starred in some softcore porn, appearing on an episode of the late-night Cinemax series Hotel Erotica.
Hotel D'Amato.
And she does appear twice naked, to be exact, into some racy things and some other kind of fetish videos as well are floating out there with her. Auditioned for the Diva Search in July 2004, but she failed to crack the top 10. Despite this, the company hired her, made her debut on November 15th under the gimmick of a makeup artist, would appear in several Diva contests throughout the rest of the year. Rest of the year, in February, she appeared in a GoDaddy.com ad made for the Super Bowl that became very controversial and was eventually pulled. It was also during this time that the story of Candace worked as a foot fetish model for a website under the name of Mackenzie Montgomery was brought up, but nothing came out of that. Well, something may have, but she would make occasional appearances on Raw from there. She was made part of the 11 wrestler trade back in June that moved her to SmackDown when she became involved in this feud. So, I mean, you know, outside of Missy Hyatt, is she the most like controversial diva they've hired? I mean,
it's really, some pretty heavy stuff, resume.
Some have done stuff afterwards, but before being hired, like, and she seems like really nice, you know, and everything. The stories are she ended up, you know, eventually retired, had a family, and like, or she may have been a mom.
Husband's a chiropractor or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she had like, she seemed like really sweet, but she's got like the most controversial background of any, you know, diva they ever hired. I mean, yeah, beyond, yeah, just everything, just the GoDaddy stuff, the Playboy, the Cinemax, the, you know, fetish videos, like, it's weird, weird hire for them.
It is a very weird hire, and she'd be there for a while. So
right, I mean, like legit, like two or three years later, there's no chance she, you know, she doesn't get a shot at all. Like by that point, she's entrenched at least. But if she came around looking for a gig and like, oh wait, I mean, there's no chance at all.
No, they were much more stringent on their, you know, vetting of candidates at that point. Here's an interesting thing. I mean, she's pretty hot. Let's not mince words. How did she not make the top 10 of the fucking Diva Search? It's right. Bizarre. I mean,
stupid fans.
Better than some of those ugly. Well, none of them are ugly, but some of them were just awkward.
Yeah.
She was certainly not awkward. Yeah, but, you know, nothing much to see here. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot to see here, but nothing match-wise to see here. Tori's still Tori. She's fucking amazing. Could she easily be the hottest on the roster?
On the roster, yeah, I think so. Pound for pound. All time, I still think she's maybe like a notch below Sunny, and then depends where you fall on Trish.
Yeah.
Trish might have had her at this point, too. They were pretty close.
Trish was heel hot when she fluffed out her hair, and yeah. Okay. Time for the main event. Our World Heavyweight Championship on the line, and for the first time in SmackDown history, JR, because the this belt has been on Raw since its inception in September of 2002. This belt never on a, as far as I know, let me think. No, this belt has never been on a SmackDown pay-per-view.
Since its conception.
Since its conception.
On 6:30, Teddy Long announced a six-pack challenge match to determine a new heavyweight champion of SmackDown, which was needed after John Cena was drafted to SmackDown. JBL would win the match in the midst of a celebration. Teddy Long came out and said he had some bad news. JBL may have won, but there's no longer a need for a new champion because Batista had been drafted to the Blue Brand with the final pick of the 2005 draft. The next week, JBL complained about being screwed and announced that he would be facing Batista at the Bash. He was interrupted by the BWO, and Blue Mini challenged him to a match, playing off their one-night stand altercation. Batista would make his first SmackDown impact later in the night when he helped Meanie defeat JBL. Later in the night, JBL and Jordan attacked Batista after a match with Christian, and I think that's the match we had talked about. Mm-hmm. JBL would quickly bail as Batista dropped Jordan with a Batista bomb. On 7:14, Batista defeated Orlando in a match where JBL hopped in the ring with the bell and planted Batista with a clothesline from hell. The next week, JBL rode to the ring in a convertible decked out like Apollo Creed to give a victory speech for their upcoming match. He cut a good promo, including proclaiming himself a wrestling god. Batista would interrupt the festivities, wipe out JBL, hit a spinebuster on Jordan, and mockingly put on the Apollo Creed outfit to end the show. And of course, that's the, that's one of my favorite visions of JBL during this period as a heel, is the Count of Monte Fisto hat. So
that's right, Count of Monte Fisto should be throwing penny. He should have been dressed with a powdered white wig and throwing the pennies in the crowd like Creed did in the first Rocky.
So that.
By
was,
the way,
yes,
our man Sly, Golden Globe nomination.
Hopefully, it's set him up for the Oscar. We'll see, but he well deserved. He was
fucking
tremendous.
Great.
Tremendous in Creed, and fitting that we're talking about this year. Yes. So, Batista, the man on SmackDown, a tough first feud for him. He had a hot close to the Triple H stuff. He gets, you know, whatever you want to say, it's still demotion. And here he is with JBL. And the problem to me with this match is, can you really buy, even though he had just been champion for a year, did anyone really buy that JBL could potentially beat Batista?
No.
It's a tough sell. That's what hurt this match on paper coming in. When you look at the shows that preceded it, and then you get this, and it's like, this match is on top. Like, if they had a better main event here, maybe if you do the Christian match, or maybe you take a break from Eddie Ray and you give Eddie a match, anything, maybe adds a little bit more juice. You know, maybe Benoit turns and fights. Anything probably just gives us a little bit extra kick that it needed. But as is, this headlining the show, just it prevents it from kind of taking it up that next notch that it needed. The Apollo Creed stuff was great, though, and then he gets the police escort to the ring here. They had to quickly rehab him to elevate him back up. And in many ways, it made sense for Batista to go through the gatekeeper, that JBL's been the man on SmackDown now. But again, foregone conclusion. Batista gets a big pop. Nice tie into how this could have happened in Mania, but Batista stayed on Raw. Taz and Cole talk a lot about that, how, you know, it seemed like this may go down back in April. All Batista early on, he clubs JBL in and out of the ring. JBL snaps Batista's neck over the top rope to switch the tide. The crowd quiets down. Batista catches JBL coming off the apron and slams him into the edge of the ring. JBL goes to the eyes and slings Batista into the post shoulder first, spills to the outside. JBL chucks Batista over the announce table and pummels him. JBL works the neck. He slings Batista to the bottom rope. JBL blocks a comeback with a sleeper, and the fans wake up a bit here trying to rally Batista, but the sleeper really slows the match down. JBL takes the fight to the floor, uses the steps. Batista smashes JBL and both tumble over the barricade. And they're trying their best to make this a big brawl, but the crowd is just not buying in, but they're working hard for it. JBL hits a clothesline from hell on the ref by accident. Jordan comes out. Batista mows him down. Batista sets up for the Batista bomb, but OJ smashes him with a chair. Batista survives. JBL hits a clothesline from hell, but the ref is back down. We get the visual pin for JBL. Batista gets a spinebuster, tosses Jordan again, and starts to hammer JBL. Batista crushes both OJ and JBL with a chair for a shitty DQ, and the crowd just hated that. Match was actually fine, I thought. Both guys worked hard, but the crowd was dead, and that finish really hurt the match as well as the crowd reaction throughout. Batista wrecks Jordan and JBL with a chair after the match and hits Batista bombs. Weird actions for the top face. You know, it keeps JBL in the picture, which they kind of needed now. Better than expected. Obvious no title switch hurt the atmosphere. And I think we're kind of a shaky start for Batista. Like, what do you think?
Well, I mean, like you said, the logic is JBL would not beat Batista. And we knew going in that we were going to get a very different match than Batista's three matches with Triple H. I was just praying that we weren't going to get like a long, boring, you know, middle of the rings. And we did. During JBL's entire run as WWE champion, I don't remember him putting a sleeper on anybody. Maybe Taker. He didn't put sleepers on people. They did a lot of hard strikes and things of that nature. And most of the stuff, you know, most of JBL's opponents were guys smaller than him. Eddie, you know, Booker, about even, you know, and Cena, obviously. But here, he's facing a guy who's about his size and, you know, probably stronger. And, you know, you're not going to chuck him around like he chucked some of the smaller guys around in 2004. So I wasn't anticipating, you know, JBL able to do the kind of things that he can do, that he did to guys in 04 that he could do to Batista. And on the other side, I mean, Batista was walking into a tough situation here because, you know, he was made in the shade with a great worker in these first three matches. It's, you know, WrestleMania, Backlash, and Vengeance. So now he's facing a guy who is a little less polished than Triple H.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, if the finish is different, is the match looked at a little bit better? Like, I feel like it's already tough enough selling you on this match to buy this pay-per-view. Like, if you're ordering this pay-per-view, you're like, and you're not expecting much. You at least kind of want a Batista win, but what happened is the Hassan thing throws the big wrench in their plans, and now they have to feel like they have to run this back-to-back. But where I disagree with that and this is where Christian comes back into play. Have Batista just mow through JBL here, right? Keep hot. And then do Christian at SummerSlam. You already have two other big matches lined up for SummerSlam. They're already in the works. You know what you're doing.
Right.
Why not give that Christian the shot there? Like, okay, it'll be third from the top if you don't trust him to carry the show. It's a fresh contender. The crowd's into it. Like, why not do that? Unless they're just worried, like they were, you know, at Vengeance, that Christian may split the pop with Batista. But I don't know. Doing the shit finish here did no one any favors. It's like, as it was, the match is just blah enough. And then you have this awful finish where Batista doesn't even win. Just, I don't know.
And he doesn't even have like the cabinet. Now it's just like, you know, Orlando's just kind of his lackey, and
right.
It's just not, it's not the same. It's not the same. Yeah, this was a bad, I would definitely say this was a bad booking choice. I think he should have just taken JBL out and set up for something at SummerSlam. Like you said, whatever the main event was going to be, for the SmackDown main event was going to be, was not going to be the match that was going to sell SummerSlam anyway. So I would have taken the chance,
mm-hmm.
you know, and done like Batista, Christian. Where the hell did Tomko go? Why didn't he just go with him? You know what I mean? There's no need to keep him on Raw. That was dumb.
Well,
you know,
because there, I mean, there's very much reason to believe it seems like they were, you know, setting him up to fail. Like, they're taking everything away that made him popular. Like, the Tomko stuff was a big part of his package. They split him. You know, they bury him on SmackDown. Right. Okay, here's this title match, fans. You wanted it. And then Batista. I vividly remember watching that match when Batista just beats him with the powerbomb. Like, it was like, ugh, really? Yeah. You know, do we need that?
Yeah.
But it's going to be a tough slate. Like, they did not do Batista any favors by putting him on SmackDown, because there aren't a ton of contenders. I mean, we talked about the roster being better than it was the year before, and the show is surprisingly, you know, feisty. But when you look at the potential challengers, who's there? I mean, you know, Undertaker's hanging around, but it doesn't seem like they're ready to do something like that just yet. And Eddie is probably your best heel, but he's tied up in a blood feud, so he's not ready yet. You know, Benoit maybe is next. Him and Booker are both, you know, faces kind of hanging around, you know, in the mid card. You got Christian, don't want to use him. So it's like he was really in a tough spot jumping over here. And it seemed like they wanted to elevate Hassan. That backfired. So I don't know. Things look a little grim for Batista as far as like heavy feuds.
Yeah. I think the weird thing is, I do have to give credit for this. There wasn't a lot of fluff on this show. They did cram a lot of action into it. There wasn't a lot of backstage. The one OJ Benoit part, and I think Eddie had a quick promo. But other than that, it was ring match. So I'll give him credit for that. But this thing was just a stinker all the way to the end.
You know, it's something too that this is a network pay-per-view. This is one you're happy paying $10 for.
Right.
Like, it's tough to have sit home and pay like $50 for this show, because it's fine. It's good. It's like entertaining enough, but you know, you want to pay for a match where there's at least a little bit of question in the main event. And to me, it's just like, there was zero chance but JBL was winning the title here. Just none at all. Mm-hmm. And that hurts it.
Yeah.
You couldn't do it, but you almost wonder if they were better off like doing some kind of tag with Batista and then closing with Ray and Eddie, you know, or something like that. Like, could they have done Batista and someone against JBL and OJ, Batista and Benoit against JBL and OJ, and maybe you start like a partnership with Batista and JBL and Batista and Benoit. I don't know. Maybe something like that, and let Ray and Eddie close the show. I don't know. It just felt very anticlimactic at the end. Like this,
mm-hmm.
it's a tough main event.
The more we're talking about it, all that interference at the end just seemed to be like just
they were doing whatever
noise.
They could, and they tried. I mean, they tried. Like, they're like, okay, let's brawl in the crowd. Let's go to the like they were trying to make it feel like a big brawl. It's just JBL just. It's not even that he's not believable as a contender. It's just Batista just beat Triple H three straight matches and beat him in the cell. Like, do you really think he's going to come over here and drop the title to JBL 2 weeks later? I mean, there was just no chance, you know?
Right. No, just really. The show kind of, you know, landed, you know, badly. I mean, it fell flat in the end. So Batista retains his World Heavyweight Championship in a real stinker. And we know a rematch is coming, so and it will not be the last match in the show. If you're Batista, what are you thinking about right now? It's like, I just beat like the top guy on Raw three straight times clean And my reward is I go to this show and I go on this brand and there's nobody.
He always made it very, I mean, he was always kind of vocal about it. Remember? He was kind of vocal that, you know, we're not the B team. They see us as the B team. We, you know, we hate Raw. Like, all that shit started when he went there. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, gets a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. I think he definitely felt it. I think he definitely thought they were saying we believe in Cena more than you as the face of our flagship show. Like, I definitely think he took it to heart a little bit.
Yeah. No, definitely I think he did. And it didn't, it wasn't done any favors that he faced a guy that he really didn't have a lot of chemistry with. And he was used to working a certain way. And the match was booked poorly and the ending sucked. And it just wasn't anything good there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this show's definitely, I mean, again, I will credit the bookers in the sense that there wasn't a lot of dull fluff. At least they jammed the thing with, I don't know, how many matches were there? 8 matches. I mean, that's good a lot. That's a lot for a secondary SmackDown show.
It really wasn't a bad show. I mean, if you compare it to some of the dogs from 03 and 04, like, it's still pretty good. I mean, I think it's, you know, Backlash ended up being okay. It's right there with Backlash and No Way Out.
Yeah, it's not Vengeance.
No, of course not. No,
it's not Vengeance. Judgment. I mean, Judgment Day is better.
Yeah, Judgment Day was better. I think it's in the class with No Way Out and Backlash. It's like in there.
Yeah,
and it's been a solid pay per view year. It continues. Like, this was definitely not a throwaway show. Ray Eddie was really good. Benoit Jordan was fine. I thought the opener was a lot of fun. Like, there's definitely stuff here to like.
Mm-hmm.
The novelty of Taker destroying Hassan. Like, there's some, you know, there's plenty here, and I never felt like overly bored watching the show. Now, like, if you think back a year ago to Bash 04, where it was Ray Chavo and nothing, you know, it was like,
yeah,
it's definitely a step up from that. So I think SmackDown's doing okay. Some questionable booking here and there, but, you know, just a lack of credible main event.
Yeah.
Guys, you almost wonder if maybe they should have just kept Kurt over here, but I guess they needed him for something else.
I mean, Batista Kurt would have been a...
Right.
I think Batista Kurt would have been a pretty good main event.
You know, that's a believable challenger.
Yes. I could see Kurt, you know, crippling Batista and Batista struggling with a submission guy and the ankle lock. I mean, you could have built some pretty solid psychology out of that. But here you're just facing a guy as lumbering as you are, but less believable as a champion now, you know. No, it wasn't good. It's on the network. We recommend watching Ray Eddie because it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could watch the main event if you want, deduce your own thoughts and theories. I don't know how much you'll get out of it, but it's definitely a middle of the road secondary show.
Yeah.
So, all right, there we go.
In the books.
In a couple weeks, we will be in our nation's capital.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. That'll be fun.
Yes.
Little announcement, I guess, we should talk about. So, after his successful stint at Vengeance, we've reached an agreement with the elusive Mark Clair, and he's going to join us on a fairly regular basis. Not every show. Maybe every other or every few, he'll be back with us to, you know, he like you mentioned, he had never seen a lot of these shows in this stretch. So it'll be cool to talk to him from a really, you know, new point of view. So he'll be back. He should be back with us for SummerSlam, we believe, at this point. And also be sure to check out our Christmas Spectacular 5th annual. Be sure to check that out. Should drop likely on either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. So be sure to check that. It'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully you can go back and listen to last year's to prepare yourself because it just may be more of the same for you.
There you go.
So that's it. Like I said, check out all our other shows, Dangerous Alliance, Kevin Kelly Show, Main Event, Sports Evolution, all the PWO shows, all the rest on our networks as well. We love them all. They're all great. Be sure to check them out. We thank you for another successful year here at Police Nation. I guess this is our last proper show, Scott, of 2015, because by the time we're back in the vault, it'll be 2016. So
2016,
another great year. A lot of changes for us as far as scheduling and whatnot, but I think it's helped us in many ways. It's kept the show fresh. I think the vaults have all been a lot of fun. And
they've been great.
Continue to prosper into another, I guess, our sixth calendar year, right?
Sixth calendar year. We've dominated the decade. Yes. A decade of destruction in 20 by 2020.
A decade of decadence.
And then we'll take the American Badass.
Decade of douchebag.
Change to the biker gimmick. Douchebag.
All right. So we'll be back. Check out Christmas. Otherwise, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks for SummerSlam. That's Scott. I'm Justin. We're out. Talk to you later.
No more consideration.
I'm going to hop in my Lamborghini and call in. Not to the peep show.
Right. Run through the lobby naked.
And then he goes into the Ford Theater.
Never!
Scotty's got a gun.
Pulls the gun out of his coach bag that he stole at Record Plus. Here we know that Christmas will
be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas to you. Christmas will be green and bright, the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night.
Melikalikimaka is a wise way
to say Merry Christmas to you. Melikalikimaka is a thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway.
Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright,
the sun to shine by day and all the stars at night. Melikalikimaka is a wise way to say Merry Christmas.
A very Merry Christmas.
A very, 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 Merry